There it is. We are live now with Pantelis. How you doing? Pantelis Comedy. Good to talk to you. I want to start with the whole history because we got Pantelis. This is a guy who had, I thought you were trilingual. You're Greek, but you speak French and English, right? Do you speak Greek?
I speak Greek as well, yeah.
Oh, okay. But you don't work in Greek. You work in French and in English, right?
Yeah, I'm thinking of in the future. I might work in Greek too. Maybe go down there. Because they have a stand-up community there. Might as well go run circles around them.
Right, exactly. So, all right. So let's do the history of your multiculturalism. Basically, were you born in Greece? I mean, how did you get to be the trilingual person that you are?
I was born in Montreal, which is it's French and English.
Yeah.
To immigrant Greek parents. So I had the Greek in the household. I went to school, elementary school was Greek, English, and French.
Yeah.
So I learned all three, but I was mostly fluent in Greek and English. And French was kind of on the side for years.
And why was that? Was that a French school?
It was a French school, yeah. It was a French school. Everything, all my schooling was in French, but it's just my influences were English. And at that time growing up, there was a lot of tension between the immigrants, the Anglos, and the French in Quebec. Because there was a couple of referendums that were done in Quebec to try to separate from Canada. And they kept losing.
Separatists.
Yeah, a lot of separatists. And they lost by a small percentage. And the last time they lost, they said it was because of these immigrants. So it always caused a tension. So a lot of the immigrants would move towards speaking English instead of French. And so I was influenced by English. I would just hear English. So automatically I would speak English.
Yeah.
And even though I'm fine to speak in French. And then my buddy, Mike Ward, you know him for sure.
Yep.
He's the one who pushed me to start doing it in French a couple of years ago. He's like, just translate your stuff. It's going to be a lot of fun. They're way better audience. It's not what you think. And then I got involved in the French and they're way better. They're like the best comedy audience ever.
Really?
How do they let you go anywhere? Because they're big into the arts. They love arts.
Yeah.
So they respect the fuck out of comedy and they let you work. They don't get offended by the smallest thing. They want to know where you're going with it. So they really, because they respect the art so much, it lets me work out a lot of stuff in French that then I could bring back to English once it's ready.
Yeah. I mean, I'm thinking of like two artists who didn't get canceled in France were Louis and Woody Allen. I mean, Woody Allen's now, I think, making French movies, basically.
And I don't know what you got to do.
Yeah.
Like in France, that's crazy. You could bang some kids. I don't know what the fuck you have to do to get canceled in France.
It's really amazing. Yeah, and I think Polanski, right? Polanski kind of went over there and directed.
But the France and the Quebec, they're two different types of French. They don't like each other.
Oh, okay.
The good ones are the Quebecers. They're really? they're closer to us. It's very similar. Yeah. And the ones from France are the ones that are more snobby and they make fun of the accent in Quebec and all that shit.
Okay, so let's go to Quebec and let's talk about the separatists. If mm-hmm. you had separatists in this country, you would be talking about probably the secessionists or like, you know, Texas, like secede from the Union. So it would probably be a red state, right wing thing. What would you describe it if you had to do on the left right spectrum? Where would the separatists be?
Oh, it's fucking interesting that you say that because they're classified more publicly. Everyone's trying to paint the separatists now as being right wing.
Yeah.
But it's a lot of these left wing organizations and political parties that are talking about separating. And I think they're painted in a negative light. I don't think there's a problem with people of a distinct belief or culture that's different. These countries are too, the US, first of all, is huge, just like Canada. They're two massive countries.
Yeah.
You're going to have people that are different. If it's not violent, there's no reason not to give them the opportunity. For example, Texas. I get why Texas would want to secede. I don't think it's evil. They do it in Spain. There's plenty of places in Spain that want to separate. You're allowed to vocalize any kind of problems you have with the federal government. It's crazy to me that I see this happen all around the world now. If it's not in Europe, if anyone else talks about separating, they're rednecks, they're stupid, they're racist, they shouldn't be allowed. We've been doing this since the beginning of time. People separate. It happens.
Well, plus, think about nationalism, right? If you're nationalist, you don't want people to secede. You want your country strong. You can't have these regions going off and doing their own thing. The nationalist was always the right winger, right?
Yeah.
And so you would assume that separatists were left wing, essentially.
Yeah, that's the weird thing about it, that you try to categorize something, make it so simple. I guess it depends in the values of each culture. But I know for the Quebecers, for example, the French Canadians, they have a distinct culture. different to the rest of Canada. They have their own system when it comes to the arts, natural resources. Realistically, if they had a solid government, if we had a solid government here in Quebec, they could separate. There's no, and they would have grounds on why they would want to. So, but the way they paint them is so bad that every time a Quebecer talks about it, it's like, oh, he's a redneck, he's stupid. But you should be allowed to discuss it and find what's best for everyone.
Yeah. What happened up there during COVID? Because the whole country of Canada, I was surprised, was probably, I mean, the US was bad enough. Canada and Ireland were two countries that I was really shocked how bad they were as far as authoritarianism goes. And basically, you know, taking away everyone's rights, business people. I mean, they were just locking them up.
Yep. I was considered a lunatic at the time.
Yeah.
We had curfews. So it's like, you can't go out of your house after 10, I think, or I wouldn't give a fuck. I'd come to the studio. We do live podcasts. You'd be like, you know, fucking stop us. We were all like very angry.
Yeah.
It was just not scientific. It showed the true colors of our government and how far their reach can extend, which should make a lot of people scared. But you know what the issue was? A lot of the people that were mostly vocal online, there's a lot of like idiots. So what happens is the government sees this and they would grab them as an example and be like, if you were against our measures, you're as dumb as this guy. Uh-huh. So then people that were against, like, this doesn't make sense. Why are we forcing people to get vaccinated? Why are we shutting down businesses? Why are we, why are we forcing kids to wear this shit? They were scared to vocalize their opinion because they didn't want to be put in the same basket. They did the same thing with when the truckers protested in Ottawa.
Yeah.
There was off the beaten path. There was random people, three people with masks, and there was a swastika flag. They took that and they ran with it to represent the thousands of families and people that showed up, Indian people, Pakistani people. It was crazy.
Yeah. And looks like your picture went away, but I think we'll get it back. It probably just will, you know, maybe it'll pop back. It's not that important. Most people who do this, they listen to the audio. Anyway. Yeah.
It's a little weird though.
I know. I'll just
as
click
long as
on
you can
it.
Hear me though. That's good.
Yeah, I can hear great. I mean, it could be on my end. I'm not going to blame you for it. So that's where you were. You're raised in Quebec, and that's, you know, that's Montreal. For the people who don't know Canada, I mean, I've been up there with comedy. I used to tour with Jim Gaffigan. So we would start, and before we hit the Midwest, we would usually drive north and then go through, do a bunch of dates in Canada. And the audiences there are great. I mean, French or not, Canadian audiences are really good. They're just good comedy audiences. Do you have any theory why that is?
I think it's because we're in the cold a lot, and we're, you know, we see everything that happens in the U.S.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of times, like, oh fuck, I wish we could experience that. I wish I could. So then, when artists that we like show up or comedians, everyone's excited. They're like, oh, you're here.
Yeah.
There's a lot of that.
Yeah, you know what? It's almost like the in the shadow of, like, Boston has a great comedy scene, and I feel like it's because they have a bit of a chip on their shoulder because they're in the New York shadow, you know?
Yeah.
And that's why, you know, Sox fans are so crazy because, like, they get the Yankees and they're so close, but they hate them so much, you know? And I think the Boston comedy scene is like, what, you think we need you, New York? You know, so they form their own. And then, like, it's almost like you're a traitor when you go to New York or LA from Boston, you know?
Even though all the best ones did.
Yes, yes. But it was like, you know, is there any of that in Canada, the people who stayed there, like the real locals who kind of have a chip on their shoulder about that, about the people who went big and went Hollywood?
It used to be. And now what there mostly is the ones that don't leave at all, that don't do anything. They kind of they resent themselves for not trying something else because it's so closed. Even in Toronto, back in the day in Toronto, there was opportunity. And there still kind of is, but not for stand-ups. I have a lot of friends that moved to Toronto and it kind of gets locked in. You don't have the same opportunities. Canada has become pretty weird when it comes to the arts, especially for stand-up. Yeah. I know that our council doesn't. So there's a lot of subsidies for other art forms in Canada, but they don't consider stand-up comedy a valid art form.
Really?
Still. So, but Quebec does. Quebec is the opposite. The French consider stand-up as the one of the highest forms of art. So that's where the, like, kind of the dichotomy is.
You know what's funny? Like, I'm just thinking here about what little knowledge I have of Canada and the arts. Okay. Let's take stand-up comedy. Now, stand-up comedy is not considered high art enough so that the government subsidizes. So what happens? Some private entity creates the Montreal Comedy Festival and it becomes the biggest thing in the world, right? Also, let's talk about what happened with Cirque du Soleil. Cirque du Soleil. They were, they, I think they were funding that. It was street performers. But then those guys were like, oh, we're going to take this big. And now Canada could have had that. They could have sponsored Cirque du Soleil and had it be a Canadian art form. But some private guy was like, I'm going to take this and commercialize it, take it to the US. And he did. If, am I right about that?
You're right. But the guy is a French Canadian guy. Mm-hmm. And I think if I don't know if he sold it, if he still has it, but he's one of the richest people. I think he's one of the dudes that that flew to space also. He's like, he's that level rich.
Yes, unbelievable rich. And so when you look at the way that it was, the amount of money that the Canadian government gave them to do there, because it was street performers.
Yep.
You know, this guy organized a bunch of street performers, which everybody loves, but no one wants to admit that they love mimes and jugglers, but they really do. And so the street festival was huge. He put them all together and then he creates a show and it becomes like the circus of the future. And he takes America by storm, even though it's a very Euro kind of thing. It's like, it's not an American vibe at all.
No, it's a bunch of gay guys hanging off the rafters. It's crazy.
Yes, but it took off like crazy. And like one show after another, 100 million here, 100 million there. I mean, the level of success of that is
But it's
just
amazing. Yes. It's beautiful.
It's beautiful and amazing. I love it. And I took my kids when we went to Vegas. We went to see that one. They have the Beatles one that they do. They have one underwater. It's absolutely crazy.
My buddy just saw the Beatles one.
Yeah.
The Beatles one, I think they just saw in Vegas.
Yep.
We're in New York. Fuck. No, it was that one or there's the Back to the Future one in New York. But I heard the Beatles one is good.
Yes.
I haven't seen a Cirque du Soleil show in years. The last performing show I saw in Vegas in August was Absinthe. And that's not Cirque du Soleil, but that was fucking amazing.
Was it kind of Cirque du Soleil like?
It was kind of like stand up and Cirque du Soleil together.
Oh yeah.
And it was one of the best live shows I've ever seen in my life. It was just so much fun.
Yeah. Okay. Third example. Gavin McInnes and his buddies start Vice with government money. They give him enough money and they're making pamphlets called Voice of Montreal, right?
Yeah.
They were like, okay, we want to take this bigger. And Montreal was like, no, this is just a pamphlet to, you know, inform people of what's going on in Montreal. Gavin took his pamphlet down in New York, changed it from Voice to Vice. Millions. Again, so everybody, like Canada's got to get on the ball because people keep stealing their mojo and making millions with it.
It's such a odd thing for you to bring up because it's the topic of conversation with a lot of comics about how they just don't see it. So the government here doesn't see 2 feet ahead of them. It's very whatever the fuck's right in my eyeball right now. They can't see ahead. And that's why all the greats leave. It's because of opportunity. It's the only reason why they'll leave. Jim Carrey left Canada. Mm-hmm. Norm Macdonald, the best. Like, there's just not enough opportunity here. And the reason why there's not enough opportunity, we're less than 40 million people, but it's also they're not building the infrastructure for them to thrive. So you have to leave.
Mm-hmm.
You have no choice. Like, for example, I or Mike or I couldn't just do 100% local stuff. I wouldn't be able to survive as a comic. That's why I have the podcast. I leave. I come to the States. You have to, or else you clip your wings.
Yeah. Okay. So let's talk about how you operate basically your business life, like with comedy. So you're kind of a podcasting. I mean, would you say you're a podcasting mogul?
Here, I guess I have a lot of podcasts. I think over 7 at this point. And I'm not on all of them. I just produce a couple of them as well. So I'm big into podcasts.
Can you see that? Did I share it the screen here?
Yeah. There we go. I see it. It's the website. Oh, yeah.
All right, that's the website, and let's go through it. Pantelis Podcast, that's yours.
Yeah.
And that's in English all the time?
That's in English. Everything's in English except for the French cast.
Okay, the French cast is in French.
Yeah, and that's insanely popular.
It is?
Yeah, it's in Quebec. It's crazy popular.
What about in France?
I have people that listen in France as well, and they take the hits because I make fun of them quite a bit, but they're cool.
Okay. And then, and Mike has done that as well, right?
Oh, the Intellectuals? Yeah, he's one of the most recurring guests, I think.
No, but Mike, like, speaks...
The French cast.
And, like, I think I tuned into French cast, and Mike was Frenching it up with you, right?
Yeah, he was my guest last week, yeah.
Okay. All right. Now, the Intellectuals...
The Intellectuals is... So, on Two Drink Minimum with me, Mike, and Chris, we our producer, he used to be the third Mike, mm-hmm. is this guy called Poseidon. He's a very, very lovable weirdo.
Yeah.
So what I did is I took him and another local weirdo, Guido Grasso, a comedian. They're both insane, especially Guido. I put them together and I produced a show called The Intellectuals because they're far from it.
Yeah.
And it's just them talking about their daily lives, and it's lunacy. They're going to jail. The cops are finding one of them in a crack house. It's just crazy shit. They're an alternative lifestyle.
Episode 151, gayest animals. And then we got Standing By. What's that one?
So this is interesting. This is there were two radio legends here in Montreal, an actual terrestrial radio. And the last one, the latter one, which was, let me see over there. We got Terry DeMonte. So Terry, you could see him on the left on your screen, the bigger guy. He was let go from one of the biggest English radio stations in Montreal. But the way he was let go, and he's good friends with Justin Trudeau, the Prime Minister of Canada.
Really?
The way he was, they let him go. When he was let go, they said that he was retiring. They talked about him at the Canadian Parliament to thank him for his service. Like, that's how important he was to Canadian radio. And then it came out. I brought him on as a guest. I didn't know him personally. And we talked on the Penthouse podcast, and he let it be known that I did not quit. They fucking pushed me out. They're pushing everyone out because the industry is dying. And they're just basically paying kids to do simple jobs on the radio. They don't want known disc jockeys. They don't want that. They just repeat. Just come on 5 minutes, give us the weather, repeat whatever propaganda we're telling you to, and fuck off. So they got rid of him. I said, fuck it. I'll produce your podcast. Just come here with your old partner, which is Ted Bird, who also does other podcasts. A great, great guy. He burned his bridges in radio back in the day. He was one of the big names here. Kind of like at the time when Howard Stern was taking over, they were still big here in Montreal. But he told all of the corporate people to go fuck themselves. So he kind of burned every bridge. So I got them back together, and now they have this podcast. So it's just two older, sophisticated, in comparison to me, radio legends, just going at it on podcast form.
Yeah. I got a question. Patrick Lemire asks, does the Canadian government support improv? Because there's lots of improv in Canada.
In Quebec, I know for a fact they do. It's one of the top art forms here. There's improv leagues.
Yeah. And it's
leagues.
But they're respected. They get the funding.
In Quebec, I don't know about Canada, because I know that stand up in English Canada, the rest of it, they don't consider it an art form. They're trying to change that. There's a lobby of comedians. They start an organization to get together and fight that because it's ridiculous.
Right. Okay. The other thing is these radio guys. Is radio subsidized by the government?
So here's the interesting part. It shouldn't be, but it is.
Yeah.
And it's funny that you bring that up, because just a few days ago, something big happened here where the Canadian government, I believe, gave Bell Media, which is one of the big conglomerates here, they do everything, $40 million. To keep jobs and keep the radios going. And then a few days later, they announced massive layoffs. Thousands of people from radio just got fired. So it's like, why are we giving you money? If the government, like, if I'm going to give you money, you better keep people fucking employed. So they are subsidized, but no one here knows how to manage their money properly.
Yeah. So
that's the problem with socialism.
I mean, in this country, your old legacy DJs, they all got killed by the fact that Clear Channel and one other company, I think, what was the other one? Cumulus or something. They bought up all the radio stations. So you had guys, you know, running entire local areas, and they would play. That's how they broke records. You know, they would play a record by REM in the Atlanta market. And then it was huge. And then the other guys who ran their radio stations in like Phoenix, they got jealous and they said, oh, I got this new band, you know? So, when Cumulus and these other guys bought them up, they consolidated, they turned everything into national playlists. And now there's no way, apparently, I don't know the local music scene, but supposedly that destroyed local music and it got rid of the DJs as the power guys in radio. Similar to what happened in Canada?
Yes, very similar to what happened here. And I'm telling you, dude, it's, for example, just in Montreal, because it's so divided, there's English and French. Mm-hmm. French radio is declining, but it's still healthy. There's people with big salaries and people listen to it. There's influence. Whereas English radio, it's there, but there's barely any influence. I had checked just as a joke to see if I can advertise my podcast on regular radio.
Yeah.
And like a week of advertising was like $200. Like it's going downhill. Yeah.
Are you going to take out the ads?
I was thinking of putting up funny ads. I understand that radio sucks. I got something better.
And yeah.
So we're gonna end up doing that because it's not expensive. So we're gonna end up doing it just to fuck around.
I think it's great, and I don't think people realize how inexpensive. I learned this through Gutfeld. Cable advertising, you can buy local. So if you are going to the the Dallas-Houston market with the live show like Greg does. You know, his manager can buy an ad on Fox News local just in that market and says, you know, see Greg at the Dallas Performance Center or whatever. And it is in the hundreds of dollars for each little market, but you're getting that Fox News audience. So you can do that with almost every cable station, Comedy Central. If you were a comedian touring the country, you probably don't realize you can buy ads very cheap in the local market you're doing. And, you know, it's probably similar to, but you know what? These days, do you really want to buy ads on Comedy Central? You'd rather kind of just have your podcast friends help you out.
That's it. That, for me, that's what works. I've turned the podcast into, like, for example, let's say the French cast. I tour now in French as well as English. And in French, it's because of the French cast. My advertising is the French cast. People listen to it. It's all in Quebec. And they're like, holy fuck, I'm going to go watch this lunatic on stage. He's in my town. So I'm my own advertising company.
Yeah. And so does it work for outside of, how does the French cast do in, you know, in the US?
There's French speaking people in the US who listen to the show, which mm-hmm. is the weirdest thing for me when I get messages from, so there's French people in Boston.
Yeah.
There's French people down south. I get messages from the weirdest spots. I'm like, get the fuck out of here. There's some French people. I'm a Greek guy. I'm a Greek guy doing it in French. So it's just, it's pretty wacky.
Yeah. I mean, what is that? I took Latin in high school, but I don't speak any other language but English. So you're very, obviously you're totally fluent, you would say, or you don't say totally fluent. You just, fluent means you can totally speak, right?
Yeah, I can totally speak. The only thing is I don't have a crazy accent in Greek or in English, but in French, I sound like a Greek guy speaking French.
Uh-huh.
Which to them makes it even funner.
Oh, yeah.
So I could get away with a lot more crazy shit because like, he's wacky. He's goofy, you know? So I could get away with that. Whereas in English, I have a Greek Park X kind of like my neighborhood accent, but it's still a North American accent.
Yeah.
Whereas French, I don't sound like a Quebecer at all. And I don't sound like a Frenchman from France. It's just this weird Greek accent.
So you kind of make fun of French culture, you know, French, you make fun of the French, but do you have...
I make fun of everyone, yeah.
You do, yeah. But you kind of have a thing about like, oh, France versus, you know, you think it's cooler in Quebec.
It is.
But do you like French culture, French films, French music, French music hall, entertainers or whatever?
There's good French music and there's probably music that you've heard on the radio that you didn't realize was coming from France. So music, they're still on top. I'm not a big fan of French food from France. I think it's overrated. I'm more of like a Mediterranean food guy. I like Italian, Greek, Portuguese. I love that kind of food way more than I do French. Films, hit or miss. Some of it's just really gay. But,
I like what I guess the film snobs would call the French New Wave, you know, Truffaut. I love watching Truffaut. Now, do you think that's kind of,
High art.
Pedestrian? Oh, it's high art. Okay.
That's high art, yeah. To me, at least. But I'm a commoner. Who am I? Who am I to judge it?
Yeah, but I mean, the French love that. The old gag is that the French love Jerry Lewis. Is that true?
That's what they say. I have no fucking idea.
Do they love broad comedy? Because I'm thinking of the French acts that have broken through here. Obviously, Gad, what's his name?
Okay, Gad's a piece of shit. That's a different story. So you're talking about Gad Elmaleh, Seinfeld's
buddy?
Gad Elmaleh built his whole career on stealing fucking jokes. Okay?
Oh, he did?
Which should be unacceptable in any comedy community in any country. But for some reason, France was slow in coming, right? Because Quebec is influenced by North America. We're in North America. So they see New York, they see LA, they see Louis C. They see all this stuff and they want to emulate to be at that level. They don't want to rip off the fucking joke word for word. Whereas in France, guys like him were just ripping off. He was ripping off Seinfeld for years. He was just doing his act, Seinfeld's act, but in French.
Yeah.
For years. And Seinfeld... Seinfeld, I think he ended up burying the hatchet and he paid Jerry Seinfeld a large sum. And then they became buddies and they high-five each other. But that shit, to me, it's unacceptable because it's not even like one random thing. He stole entire acts. He was caught. Mike Ward had an interesting altercation with him where he was asking Mike backstage after, I think he was in France somewhere. And he asked Mike, hey, do you come around here often? And Mike's like, well, whatever. Sometimes they invite me. And he goes like, do people know you? Do a lot of people know you around here? And then Mike lost it. She's like, don't fucking steal my jokes. Are you asking? Because you want to do my, you don't fucking do my. Yeah, Mike went off on him. He's like, you piece of shit.
I mean, it's very interesting because when I saw him on like the Tonight Show or whatever it happened to be, you know, he comes out, he's French, and I'm thinking like, okay, now this guy is really like, and then they announced his big national tour, you know, kind of like who's the East Asian guy that's very big, you know, Peters, Russell Peters, right?
Oh yeah, yeah.
He's big in Canada too, isn't he?
Yeah, he was huge. He started in Canada.
Yeah.
He's huge. Now he's international. He started doing arenas and stuff. I don't know. I've heard, oh, he stole this. But it's not as rampant as you. Dad, literally, we know he lifted word for word.
Yeah.
Russell might also be the victim of once you get a certain level of success.
Yeah.
People are going to get pissed off at you. So him, I don't know 100% because I didn't see it for myself. I've seen people rip off Russell Peters rather. But yeah. Gad, it's a known thing, especially in the French community. It, like real comedy fans here in Quebec hate him.
Right.
Because they don't like that shit.
I wondered because, and I don't have any evidence that that Russell Peters steals jokes. I know that he got very big, and then a lot of people were kind of like, oh, you know, where we come from, we don't care about Russell Peters. Like he,
yeah.
So there's always the guy that breaks in and then gets very big, and then you hear, you know, things. So you're saying it's, you know, it's almost interesting the idea that that is a path. You know, people. It is. I mean, it's not a legitimate path. That is the worst thing you can do is steal material. But this idea that he does an act word for word, and then he gives cash payments to Seinfeld, which of course, you know, cash payments, that'll make you bury the hatchet with anybody.
That's what I was thinking too. But it's just, I don't know. It was just so fucked up hearing that. And then he keeps doing it. You know what he did? You want to hear a fucked up story?
Yeah.
One time he had he didn't marry, but he had a baby with, I believe, one of the European princesses, like one of his kids is royalty in Europe.
Uh-huh. Gad.
Yeah, Gad. So the guy's fucking super wealthy. And he was doing something on stage in France about how, oh, you know, I can't, my small apartment, I can't afford an air conditioner and it doesn't work. And then someone's like, dude, you clearly lifted that from an open micer. You don't have an air conditioner that doesn't work in a small apartment. This is insane that you're even trying these jokes on us. And yeah, he gets caught a lot. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So back to your business, you got the podcast, you got the, you know, what, and you, do you have sponsors on the podcast? Like
yeah.
People, oh, okay.
So we
and
get,
how do you do it?
So I get sponsors. Now I've become pretty good at it. I get sponsors. Like people are recurring, like Manscapes come on a lot. Now I have Polysleep, a mattress company that actually originated from Montreal that they're going all across North America.
Yeah.
They're big sponsors. I have good relations with them. I'm signed with another company that gets me odds for audio, and yeah. They inject them.
Yeah.
So it's one of those new inject ads, so I don't have to fucking think about it. Even if you listen to an episode from a year ago, you're going to get a new ad. So little right. Things like that, and it helps because and I have the Patreon. It helps because the more you can stay independent,
yeah.
The better off you are. You don't have to worry. So right now, since I'm fully independent, I could say whatever the fuck I want. I have yeah. My sponsors, I have my Patreon, my own fans, I do my stand-up, people come out to see me. So I prefer that instead of selling out and becoming like a Gad and fucking stealing Jerry's jokes.
Yeah, so the two ones that you got, Manscaped and then the mattress.
Like Manscaped, I haven't had Manscaped in a while, but I have the mattress company. I have a recurring, like if you listen to the audio, that company's always finding new, like Ryan Reynolds' Mint shit was doing ads too on it.
Yeah.
So especially the French cast gets so many downloads that it's way easier to get ads here in Quebec for them because it's one of the most listened to shows in the province.
Right. Yeah. So. And it's always things like that though. Like when you hear podcasts, it's like, I guess you got nutritional. That's a big one, right? Like powders and supplements.
Yeah.
For some reason, mattresses, like how did mattresses get like they just love podcasts.
You know what I'm thinking? It's because you at some point you're going to need a mattress, but you don't need it every day. So you yeah. Need to advertise somewhere where it's in someone's head, especially if it's a jingle or someone keeps mentioning it. So when you do need or someone needs like, oh, fuck, dude, I was just listening to Super Mattresses or whatever the fuck. So go yeah. To supermattresses.com. Like it's all in your head
because right.
It's the only way or else you're just going to Google mattress and fall on the first one. You're not going to fall on the one that spent money on the advertising.
Yeah. And although it is kind of like the idea of a mattress is. You know, there seem like they'd be more conservative of company. They'd be worried, but you definitely have to have advertisers that don't care about that stuff. Cause otherwise you wouldn't, you know, you're going to do whatever you're going to do.
Yeah.
Have you ever had an advertiser be like, we got to drop you because of that thing you did with those guys. Like you
no.
Called animals gay. So we got to drop you.
Yeah. No, but I think it's because I do comedy. Like we're in, why is this fucking turning off all the time? Cause I do comedy. I think that helps. And also I don't have like, any scandal that I have, or let's say my partners, anyone around me has, is all comedy related. And maybe we pass the line with a joke, but it's never like we don't have rapes or beating people up or anything illegal. Yeah. So I think because of that, it's way easier. If we were pieces of shits and we were beating people up or, you know, sexual assaulting people, then I think it would be different. But the fact that it's like, all right, they made a off-color joke. That's what they fucking do. I think that's what makes it easier. I think if you're a piece of garbage, it'll be pretty hard to get advertisers moving forward.
What's the tabooest thing? I mean, it, like you said, like they don't want to hear violence, but sometimes violent talk and sex talk doesn't get you in trouble at all. I mean, you could do sex talk now on network TV, but I feel like it might be the ethnicity, you know, like any ethnic, who was the guy, you know, who got, you know, he didn't get on SNL, but then he just,
Shane Gillis.
Yeah. It's just Shane, right?
Shane's the fucking man.
I mean, Shane, it was just, he got canceled just from like old fashioned ethnic humor that I used to do on Comedy Central in the 90s. Like
I did that right now and it wasn't even a joke. It's just how I felt in that goddamn restaurant. The thing about Shane, the worst part about it is it's not even a, it was satire. He was clearly playing the role of that landlord. It was, he's clearly fucking around, but they take the clip out of context and they make it seem like, look, we caught him saying this behind the scenes as if it wasn't, he wasn't trying to say that. Like you caught his feelings. It was clearly a joke. It's the equivalent. It is honestly the equivalent of taking the clip from American History X of Edward Norton killing that guy, the black guy in the street, curb stomping him. And then being like, why is Edward Norton attacking a black man? This is an, it's a fucking movie, dummy. This isn't real life. This is art.
Yeah, I know. In fact, if you find his bits that they say are offensive and they clip the punchline, then they say, look at this offensive punchline. But if you go back and look at the setup, most of his setups are, oh, I'm going to tell you why white people are stupid and awkward. And like the beginning, it's a, he's lampooning white people. And then he does a you know, a thing about black people. And they say, look what he said about black people. You know,
because he's not, they can't put it in context. Because if they put it in context, you'd see that Shane Gillis is not a racist. He's just a fucking funny dude who likes to fuck around. He's one of the funniest people around right now.
Yeah.
One of the funniest around. I'll fucking say that right now. One of the funniest. And they're treating him. And now he's gone so big. I'm very happy that no matter what they try, he's going to be successful. So good for him. I even saw TMZ. I was last week. They were taking more stuff out of context. He was, I think, one of his shows that he was doing with Tommy Pope on Compound.
Yeah.
And he was making fun of the fact they had CNN on. And they were making it seem like he was serious. But clearly, he was making fun of the fact that he was on Compound. So it's like, why are you guys listening to CNN? You shouldn't listen to this Jew stuff. And whole point of that joke was because we're on Compound. That's the joke. Like, isn't this like an extreme right wing? It was all satire. He's just fucking around. And they're making it sound like it's a soundbite that he didn't want them to get. Like, it was him speaking from the heart. It's so stupid. If you fall for this, you don't deserve to enjoy his comedy, really.
Yeah, which is why, obviously, NBC did fall for it because they let him out of his contract. But then, I got to give him credit. They had him back on. So I think that's definitely kudos to Lorne Michaels because he basically, it's almost, he didn't have to apologize and, you know, whatever. He basically admitted the fault, like, oh, you got me. He's now a huge, he's probably the, I mean, I don't know if he's the number one touring act now, but he's got the Netflix special and he's huge.
Good.
So it was the acknowledgement and they have him back to host SNL. So it's like bigger than ever. Okay. So your business again, I always curious about this stuff because I think people love this. When they listen, they say, how do these guys do it? Like they're always sitting around on their microphones talking and then they play these late night gigs.
Wow, there's so much work. There's so much work. Forget it. The comedy aspect is already huge. Just getting your shit together. The touring is it's not easy, right? Yeah. Writing and practicing. And I'm on stage a lot in both languages. So for me, it's a little harder because I got to switch. It's not direct translation. That doesn't work in humor, right? Mm-hmm. There's certain jokes that I can't even say in the other language. It's just not funny. Yeah. It's only funny in one of the languages. So that's a lot of effort. Then the podcast, recording, getting the guests, editing, all that shit. There's people like you have to deal with then advertisers or your Patreon, like going out and trying to look for ads. All that shit is time in the day. It consumes your days. It becomes your life 70 hours a week. It's all you do. But if you're going to ask me, would I prefer doing this and not having some dickhead over my shoulder as a 9-to-5? I choose this because it's not like I didn't have another choice. I used to love like the job that I was doing until I didn't.
What was it?
You know? Dude, I started working in video games. I was working at Electronic Arts. And I was a development coordinator there. Then I worked, we're making mobile apps in the early 2010s. And then I moved to a company where I was doing virtual reality. I was a producer producing like virtual reality experiences. And it was pretty cool. I was one of the youngest like producers that I knew in the field at the time. It was new. It was cutting edge, augmented reality and virtual reality. Now it's becoming more mainstream. And around 2017, I was like, ah, fuck. Because I was doing comedy since I started podcasting in 2010. And I started doing stand-up in 2012. So around 2017, I was like, let me just fucking try to go on my own, see if I could make something work. And I was consulting on the side while I was setting up the you know, the podcast empire and the stand-up. It was crazy time for me, yeah. Thinking about quitting a lot. Then I met Mike and we started Two Drink Minimum and everything took off from there.
Yeah. So 2012, first time you're getting up on your feet.
Yeah. First time I was getting up on an open mic because I had a bunch of friends that for years they were pushing me to do stand-up. And I was trying to explain to them that my humor will not work with regular people that don't know me. It's only funny because you know me. And they're like, no. So it was kind of like, all right, I'm going to do an open mic. I'm not scared to speak. I'll do it. We're going to see that I'm not funny to people. And then we never speak about this again. Yeah. And the opposite happened. I went up for 7 minutes and fucking destroyed. And then I got addicted. And someone invited me. They go, we're doing a tournament for the best open micer in Montreal. How long have you been doing it? And I was like, this is my first time. And like, no, don't fucking lie. How long have you been doing it? I was like, no, it's my first time. So I went, I won. I went all the way to the finals. This is my first month of comedy.
Yeah.
And I lost in the finals to a professional comedian. So I was like, wait a second. If I've done this fucking five times and every time, you know, and now I'm in the finals, there's something to it if I had to lose to a professional.
Yeah.
So then it was done. The script was written. I wasn't stopping.
Yeah.
And I always loved comedy. I just didn't think it was for me.
Then was there a dip after that? Like a year in, did you have some rough gigs and be like, oh, here's the dues paying I never thought I had to do?
Yeah, rough gigs would come because I knew that I moved up too fast because I started in April of 2012. And in October of that same year, I was already getting paid to do stand-up. So I remember at the local club, I was doing a weekend and then those private shows because people were hearing about me. And I knew it was too fast. So whenever I'd bomb, I'd be like, you're fucking paying for it. But I would learn from every bomb. Yes. I would learn and they just became stories after that I would then use on stage. But yeah, every time you bomb initially because you go up too fast, unless you're an idiot, you know that you're paying for it because you moved up too fast.
Yeah. And I think I have a similar, and I would guess most professional comics have a similar story that you just want to get on at the right clubs. And I talked my way on at Caroline's. I'm glad I did it. But, you know, I had gone to school with Anthony Clark, who was already, he was doing very well. You know, he was the Emerson star. And he did the Tonight Show and he was headlining Caroline's. And I just happened to be there for a late night show. And I told the booker, I went to school with Tony. And, you know, I called him Tony, like he was my buddy. And she said, oh, I'll have you open for him. So she put me on opening act on the weekend. So I had, you know, Thursday, Friday, two shows on Saturday, Sunday. And I didn't have 20 minutes of material.
Oh, no.
Got to do 20, you know? So I'm up there and I spent my whole material after 9 or 10 minutes. And then I had to do crowd work and boy, was that bad, but I was much better by Sunday.
Yeah. You see though, because you put yourself in that situation, you had no choice.
Yeah.
Dig yourself out of it. Yeah.
Wake up on Saturday. I started writing material. I was like, I got to fill that other 10 minutes. I look like an idiot. Luckily the booker's not there. They don't come in until the headliner's on. So she didn't see me bombing. And then all of a sudden I was a regular at Caroline. So this is the way, the things you have to do, you know?
Yeah.
And Gad, he just had to steal other people.
Sometimes it's easy. You just got to go to another country and steal some shit.
So what would you say is your, let's do like a percentage pie. Like if you had a business is, you know, like where do you make your money? Podcasting or is it the live gigs? Like, do you do the podcasting to support the live gigs or do the live gigs kind of drive the podcasting, which creates the advertising?
It's become like a circle now.
Yeah.
So it's both. It feeds into itself. So the podcasting is my billboard and it helps me sell shows that then I'll make money. But because now in the last like year or so, we've gotten so many advertisers on the podcast and there's the Patreon. So the podcasts make their own money as well. So the thing that's advertising me is also making its money, but there's a lot of costs associated too, right? Like I don't have, I know you can't see here, but I have big, big fucking studios. There's two studios here. For different podcasts. We even produce other people's podcasts. We rent it out. I have producers that produce other. I've created like a whole business around podcasting here.
Yeah. Where is it?
Physically, it's in Montreal. It's actually right in the middle of the island of Montreal.
Yeah.
So it's a couple of minutes from downtown. You just got a, it's one long street and it's at a prime spot. So there's a lot of parking. It's not like it's at my house. So it's a whole, it's a business in itself, yeah. Its own building.
Yeah, like so compound, like compound.
Like compound, exactly. Exactly, and very close to that. Because this used to be the garment district also. So that's what's, yeah.
You used to be in New York garment district?
No, I'm saying this place is in the old Montreal garment district.
Oh, yeah.
Great. Same thing. It's kind of like a district that changed. It's trying to reinvent itself. So I set up the studios here in 2020 during the pandemic in the summer. I took a big chance because the rents were so low. No one wanted to move. It was all empty. So I said, look, I'll make a deal with you for 5 years. But you got, the rent has to be acceptable and we're going to build this.
And do you have like Kumia, do you have like a video screens and like a, cause it's like, is it set up like a TV show?
No, it's not set up like a TV show. Cause Kumia does his own thing. He's wacky in that way.
Yeah.
I still like the, like we have green screens if ever I need it, maybe for a sketch to fuck around.
Yeah.
But I like, the thing that I like about podcasting is, to me, podcasting is kind of the evolution of what Opie and Anthony used to do, what Howard Stern used to do. So yeah. I like the talking. I don't give a shit about if the background has New York in it or whatever. No one's, people are going to look for 5 minutes and they're going to listen to the rest.
Yeah, I know. That's why I would almost want to do complete audio, but it seems like people, I don't know, certain people you will only do the video. Yeah.
Yeah.
Not that I really care. I mean, I do this for fun anyway, because I work at Fox. I'm working broadcasting, but I want to have this opportunity to, you know, just go out and talk. And, you know, I kind of like having my own little thing here that's kind of unserious.
Which is fun. This is great. Yeah. How's Fox?
What's that?
You having a good time at Fox?
Yeah. Oh, it's great. And with Gutfeld, listen, Gutfeld is the greatest gig in the world because, you know, somebody else, because I do, you know, like Joe Biden on there. Right. So we do the Biden and people love that Joe Biden. And then it makes people come see me. I've been doing 4 o'clock shows now because the Fox News audience is older. So I do comedy clubs at 4 o'clock and, you know, it's great. And they love it. Like they thank me after the show, not just for my show. They say, thank you for doing Gutfeld. Thank you for the show. And thank you for doing a 4 o'clock show because they want to go home. You know,
it's 4 o'clock on what, a Wednesday?
Huh? And I'll Jesus do Sunday. Christ. I'll do Sunday at four. You know, it was actually, to tell you the truth, you know who gave me the idea? Bill Cosby. Cosby used to do four o'clock shows because his audience was old.
Which is crazy because I thought he liked them sleepy.
Exactly. But, you know, when Gaffigan and I were touring, sometimes we'd go into a theater like in Red Bank and Cosby would be leaving because, you know,
he just finished.
Yeah, he was done. And his crowd was like the retiree crowd. And they want to go to see a show, have dinner and then go home and be a Betty by. So that's the same with the Gutfeld crowd. I'm loving it. But somebody said the other day, like, oh, that Joe Biden, all those people, you should be on Saturday Night Live. And I'm thinking like everybody still thinks in the old world. Like Gutfeld has millions of viewers every night, like 5 nights a week. He has a couple of million view. I don't know what the numbers are, but it's like 2 million people or something.
That's a lot.
Yeah.
That's not like, nothing.
Yeah. And I think it's more than that. Like his rating is like 1.8 million or something. And then I know there's more people because I used to be on Comedy Central and I used to do Conan and I did the Tonight Show and I never had a following. Nobody knew me from those shows. But now I go like, you know, I go to Dallas and people are like, hey, like they stop me on the street. So I know there's more people watching than they even think. But I said to that person, I said, you got to get out of your like, oh, Saturday Night Live. It's like, I have my show. Like I'm on Gutfeld, you dummy. Like Saturday Night Live is like, I don't need it. I got my show, you know?
It's not what it used to be. And it sucks because for comics, it's always going to, you know, even though we make fun of it because it's been so stupid and what they did to Shane, it still does hold, like at least in my heart, it still holds something dear. You know, SNL was so important for comedy for so many years. So many of the greats were there. It sucks that they turned it into something shitty. I'd be happier to see them kind of rebound and become funny again and become relevant, culturally relevant and cool. And they might be working towards it. Maybe this is the first step. Maybe they're bringing Shane back to be like, look, we got to stop with this cancel culture bullshit.
Yeah. I mean, let's hope. I think the thing is it's proving its course. Louis J. Gomez, guys like you, guys like Kumia, you know, they're now industries in and of themselves. So
Louis J. Gomez does not get the respect I've been saying is that he deserves because if you go on the internet and look back, people would talk, other comics would talk shit about him because he was trying to do things his own way.
Yeah.
And a lot of those guys now don't even fucking work.
Yeah.
And he has his own podcast network. He's touring. He's with his friends. He probably has one of the better festivals He put his fucking head down. He worked his ass off and he created something by himself that more people should try to emulate and respect that shit.
And I used to do his show. The reason I know him is that he was basically a flyering guy. Like, he would hand out flyers. He was a promotions guy, like street team.
But that's the hustle. That's how much he that's how much this guy, I respect the fuck out of this guy.
Yeah.
I respect him a lot because people don't respect that enough. And a huge part of this industry is that you're not going to, those days are gone. No one's going to come and be like, you're amazing. I'm going to give you a TV deal. You got to build it from the ground up. And that's what he did. He knew it. And he's like, fuck it. I'm going to put my head down and work. And he created something amazing. He has this nice little ecosystem. Skankfest is probably one of the best festivals for comedy. Yeah.
I mean, it's like sold out a year in advance or something, right? It's
everyone's
crazy.
Having fun. The fans are cool. Like I have friends that go down there and all they say are good things. Like, come on, you got to give the respect as comics. We have to give the respect to the people that are moving the culture and the industry forward. And he's one of those fucking guys.
Yeah. And you are too, Pantelis Comedy. All right. Thank you for doing the show. I think this was great. I mean, there's more to talk about, but we'll just leave it there. I'm not Joe Rogan. I can't go on for 3 hours.
Another time. I'm going to see you in person. Next time I'm in New York, I'm going to fucking hit you up and we'll go hang out.
Yeah, we'll do it. And, you know, I'll do one of the podcasts. You know, I can't, I'm a conservative Catholic guy. I can't get down and be profane with the other guys. But I love, it's funny because I'm very clean, but all my favorite comics are like, they're just like this, you know, the Legion of Skanks. And like, because I like people who, you know, I don't like fake, you know, fake nonsense. And the realest guys, they tend to be the dirty guys too, you know.
That's how it is.
All right. Pantelis, this was fantastic. Thanks for doing it.
Thank you, Tom.
All right. I'll see you again. Bye-bye.